Welcome. We're doing a deep dive today into something pretty radical, actually. It's a whole new look at the tarot.
Right.
Forget fortune telling for a sec, because our source today, a writer named Pappas, he makes this huge claim.
A really audacious one.
Yeah. He says these 78 cards are, and I'm quoting here, the primitive book of ancient initiation.
Wow, he doesn't stop there either. A Bible of Bibles, the key to occult science, even the lofty philosophy and science of ancient Egypt.
Exactly. So our mission today is to really unpack how Pappas builds this argument, how he thinks the tarot encodes, well, everything, universal laws, ancient wisdom.
We'll look at the origins he suggests, its really intricate structure, and what he claims you can do with it from, cosmic understanding down to practical stuff.
Prepare to have your view of a deck of cards possibly, well, completely flipped.
It's quite a journey.
So where does he even start with such a bold claim?
Well, it all hinges on one fundamental secret, according to Pappas, the sacred Hebrew word Yod-Gvaeuwe.
What
That's
the?
when. And for him, this isn't just, a word. It's the blueprint, the actual blueprint for
A
creation.
blueprint. Wow. So break that down. Four letters.
Four letters. Yod, he, vau, and then another he. And each one isn't just a letter. It has a number, a symbol, a really deep meaning.
Okay.
So yod, that's number 10. Think of it as the origin point, the spark, the active masculine principle, like a single dot that everything else comes from.
Right, the source.
Exactly. Then comes the first he, number 5. This is the opposite, the passive feminine principle, the non-ego, Pappas calls it. It receives the spark from yod, gives it form.
Okay, active yod, passive he, what connects them?
That's vau, number 6. Vau is the link, the bridge. It unites those two opposites, blends them. It creates the third point of a trinity, essentially, active and passive combined.
Makes sense. And the last letter, the second he.
Right, the second he. Also number 5. This one's about transition. Pappas calls it a yodin germ, like a little seed holding the potential for the next cycle. It's the passage from one thing to the next.
So yod creates, he receives, vel connects, and the second, he transitions to a new cycle.
You got it. That's the core sequence.
It feels like
Yeah.
a code. And you mentioned numbers. How do they fit in beyond just values?
Yeah, this is crucial. For ancients, numbers weren't just for counting. They were expressions of absolute laws. Pappas highlights two key theosophic ways of working with them.
Theosophically.
First is theosophic reduction. You take any number, add up its digits until you get a single digit. His example is 2 plus 4 plus 8 plus 8. That's 22.
Right. Then 2 plus 2 is 4. So 2488 reduces to 4. It reveals its essence, its root number.
Interesting. What's the second one?
Theosophic addition. Here, you add up all the whole numbers from 1 up to your target number.
Mm.
So for 4, it's 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4.
Which equals 10.
Exactly. And what's fascinating is through these methods, numbers like 1, 4, 7, 10, 13, 16, 19, they all reduce back to 1 eventually.
Wow. So there's this hidden unity.
The deep interconnectedness, yeah. And this brings us right back to the tarot.
Because Pappas shows that the first four numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, they perfectly mirror that sacred word sequence. Yod, he, vau, second he.
Ah, so one is yod, two is he, three is vau, four is the second he.
Precisely. This is the Tetractus of Pythagoras he talks about. And this idea that numbers mean something intrinsically, that's the key Pappas uses to unlock the tarot's structure.
Okay, so we have the sacred word, the number philosophy. Now let's see the tarot itself through this lens. 78 cards, right?
Yeah, 78 cards divided into two main groups, the 56 minor arcana and the 22 major arcana.
And the majors include that unnumbered one, the fool.
That's right. 21 numbered plus the foolish man, as Pappas often calls him.
Let's start with the minor arcana. Those 56 cards, they feel more familiar, maybe like regular playing cards.
They do. You've got the four suits or colors, scepters, which are like clubs, cups, like hearts, swords, which became spades, and pentacles are
And
diamonds.
each suit has 14 cards, king, queen, knight, knave, then ace through 10.
Correct. And here's where Yod He Vau He comes right back in, but within each suit.
Oh, really?
The king, that's Yod, the active principle.
Makes sense. The ruler.
The queen, that's he, the passive receptive one.
Okay.
The knight, that's vau.
Yeah.
The connecting blending force, often seen as the active result.
Then the knave.
The knave is the second he, the transition, maybe the child or the potential for a new phase.
Wow. Okay, so the court cards follow the pattern.
But wait, there's more. The four suits themselves also follow the Yod H E V A U He pattern.
Da-da!
Scepter is Yod, active initiating. Cup is the first he, receptive, passive. Sword is vow, balancing, sometimes dividing. And pentacles is the second he, transition, manifestation, the result.
That's incredibly layered. It's like a fractal pattern.
It really is. Pappus even connects them to Christian symbols, the scepter, as a bishop's crozier. Cup is chalice, sword is cross, pentacles as the host wafer.
Huh. And what do the minor arcana represent overall?
Aspects of our being, from the physical body up through the mental or intellectual realms, the details of life.
Okay, that covers the 56 minors. Now, the big ones, the 22 major arcana. These are the picture cards, right? The unique ones.
Exactly. Here, the numbers and the figures are completely unified. Each card is a distinct, powerful symbol. And guess what?
Let me guess. Youdevauhe again.
Right at the start. The first four major arcana are the direct symbolic forms of the sacred word, setting the stage for everything else.
Which ones are those?
Card one, the juggler or magician. That's Yajat. Creative, divine, active.
Okay.
Card two, the high priestess. That's the first he. Preserving, passive, intuitive, astral.
Right.
Card three, the empress. That's vow. Transforming, fertile, physical, the generative power.
And card four?
The emperor. That's the second he. It represents transition, but also establishing order, becoming the creator of the next phase. It's manifestation.
So the first four majors lay out the absolute foundation based on the sacred word.
Precisely. And then Pappus organizes the remaining numbered majors, 1 through 21, into three groups of seven, three septenaries.
Septenaries, groups of seven.
Yeah. And each septenary represents a whole world or level of reality.
Okay, where are they?
The first seven, arcana 1 to 7, that's the divine world, God, the source.
Right.
The second seven, arcana 8 to 14, is the world of man, laws, interaction, human experience. Mm-hmm. And the third seven, arcana 15 to 21, is the world of nature. Facts, consequences, the material world.
Divine, human, natural.
No.
That's quite a framework, but it sounds complex. How did Pappus suggest people actually grasp this, just memorize it all?
Well, he emphasized understanding the principles behind it, the Yodo, H-E-V-I-U system, the numbers. He'd show how cards relate, like the fifth arcanum, the Pope, or Hierophant.
Yeah.
He explains it as a reflex of Yod, but seen negatively or related to the fourth arcanum, the Emperor. So the fifth is like an echo or consequence of the fourth within this logic system.
So it's about seeing the connections, the logic web, not just isolated cards.
Exactly. It's deeply interconnected. And don't forget the two key cards framing it all. The foolish man, often 0 or 22, representing the beginning and end, the potential.
And the world card.
And the world, usually 21 or 22, representing completion, totality, the entire system synthesized. They're like bookends.
Okay, this is getting really vast. Mm. It's not just symbols anymore, is it?
Not according to Pappus. This is where he argues the tarot tells a grand story, the story of existence itself.
A story.
Yeah. He says it contains a cosmogony, how the universe was created, an androgyny, how humanity was created, and even a theogony, the innate creation of God.
Whoa. Theogony, androgyny, cosmogony, all in a deck of cards.
That's the claim. It's this whole holistic view. And it depicts this double current running through everything.
Double current?
Involution. That's the divine descending, spirit becoming matter, progressively getting denser.
Okay.
And evolution. And that's the opposite. Matter ascending, becoming more spiritual, returning towards the divine, a cosmic ebb and flow.
So let's break down those gonies. Theogony first, the divine story. What does the tarot say about God?
It starts with an absolute, unnameable one behind everything. Unknowable, really.
The ultimate source.
Right. But this one manifests as divine trinity. You can think of it as God the Father, the active force like Osiris or Brahma.
Okay.
God the Son, the passive receptive aspect like Isis or Vishnu.
Hmm.
And God the Holy Ghost, the balance, the synthesis like Horus or Shiva.
Father, Son, Holy Ghost. But mapped onto older deities too. Interesting.
And here's maybe the wildest part of the theogony. Hmm. Pappus describes God's very being using the tarot structure. He says the universe is God's body.
The whole universe.
The whole universe is God's body. Humanity, collectively, is God's soul. And God himself, the consciousness, is God's spirit.
That's a profoundly embodied divinity.
Yeah.
Not some distant creator.
Very much so. Now, androgyny, the human story.
Right. We're about us.
The tarot teaches that each one of us contains an Adam, the source of will, linked to the brain, reason.
Okay.
And an Eve, the source of intelligence, linked to the heart, intuition, feeling.
Adam and Eve within each person.
Yes.
Yeah.
And finding true balance as a human means harmonizing that inner Adam and Eve.
Mm.
Will and intelligence, brain and heart.
That resonates. And does the family structure fit in?
It does. Remember the court cards? King, father, queen, mother, knight, young man, knave, child. Pappas says this mirrors the divine family structure, just on the human level.
A microcosm of the divine.
And for an initiate, the tarot maps out a whole spiritual path. A journey involving a kind of descent facing challenges, represented by cards like Strength 11, The Hanged Man 12, even Death 13.
Confronting mortality or transformation.
Exactly. Conquering that death aspect to achieve spiritual growth or ascension. It's a roadmap for inner work.
Okay, that's theogony and androgyny. What about cosmogony, the universe story?
Here, the universe isn't just made by God, but somehow through humanity's participation in God's creative acts, it's all interwoven.
We're co-creators.
In a sense, yes.
Yeah.
The universe unfolds through principles like natrons, the active universal transforming force.
Nature-naturing.
Right. And naturata, the passive manifested reality, the result of that force. Involution again. And this whole cosmic process leads to what Pappas calls the fatal force of destiny. Interestingly, he suggests even materialist science, by studying natural laws, is unknowingly worshiping the divine, just in its most material naturata form.
That's a fascinating perspective on science. Okay, so we have this incredibly complex system, divine, human, cosmic levels, all interconnected. What's the point? What do we do with it besides admire the structure?
Great question, because while we think tarot fortune telling, Pappas insists it's much bigger. He calls it a general key to a powerful analogical method.
Analogical method, like thinking by analogy.
Exactly, but in a very structured way. He uses the world card number 21 or 22 as the prime example. Remember its structure?
Yeah, the four figures in the corners, the central figure in the ellipse.
Right, four fixed points like the apocalyptic animals and one central mobile element, the dancing figure. Pappas says the single pattern, this figure principle, can explain tons of different things just by changing the labels.
So the structure of the relationship is the key, not just the specific symbols.
Precisely. You could apply it to physics. White light, central element, hitting a prism, the fixed point structure, creating the spectrum of colors, the result.
Okay,
I see that. Or physiology. Mm. Blood, central element, acting on different organs, fixed points, producing various secretions like saliva, bile, results.
Wow. It's a template for understanding systems.
Even human life, childhood, youth, maturity, old age as the fixed points, maybe the individual will or life force as the central element moving through them. It's a universal pattern recognition tool.
That's actually really powerful, beyond just tarot cards.
Definitely. And he claims one of the tarot's original uses was astronomical, deeply tied to the calendar.
Astronomical, yeah.
Those four corner figures on the world card, they map directly to the four seasons.
Okay.
The oval space around the central figure,
yeah.
That relates to the zodiac, the 12 signs, the central figure itself, the planets moving through the signs.
Whoa.
He even connects the minor arcana pips, ace to 10, to decans, 10-day periods within the zodiac signs, allowing for really detailed horoscope construction.
So like a visual astrological calculator.
Kind of, yeah. And he mentions that gypsy traditions, or what he knew of them, supposedly held remnants of this ancient astronomical connection.
That's wild. And then there's the connection to games. That seems almost mundane compared to cosmology.
It's surprising, isn't it? But Pappas claims the tarot is the ancestor of many games we know. Chess, for instance.
Chess? How?
Think about it. King, queen, knight. The foolish man could be the pawn or knave role. He even mentions primitive boards with numbers used for philosophical problem solving.
Oh.
He suggests it's also the root of dice, dominoes, backgammon, even draughts or checkers, that the principles got simplified into different game mechanics.
So we're playing cards too. Hearts, spades, diamonds, clubs.
Absolutely. In his view, modern playing cards are a degraded form of the tarot. They kept the four suits, cups to hearts, swords to spades, pentacles to diamonds, scepters to clubs, but lost the knight card, lost the deep symbolism, and crucially, lost the entire major arcana.
Just the shell remained, basically.
Pretty much. The esoteric meaning was stripped away for simple gaming.
Okay, so after all this cosmology, astronomy, games,
mm-hmm.
What about divination? The fortune-telling aspect everyone associates with tarot.
He does address the divining tarot, but he makes a distinction. He claims ancient prediction tied to that astronomical tarot was more scientific, determining maybe 2/3 of events based on cycles and positions.
Based on the astrology inherent in it.
Right. He feels modern fortune telling has mostly lost that scientific astrological basis and relies much more on the reader's intuition, the prophet's personal ability.
So he offers methods, but with that caveat.
Yes, he provides simplified rules, trying to get away from just rote memorization of meanings. He ties the interpretations back to those core principles he applied to the cart's position and neighbors, making it more about understanding the system.
So wrapping this up, this deep dive really shows the tarot, at least through Pappas's eyes, as far more than superstition.
Oh, absolutely. He presents it as this meticulously crafted archive of ancient wisdom, a universal key almost.
A framework to understand God, humanity, the universe, ourselves. From the biggest picture down to, well, card games.
It really makes you think, doesn't it? If something like a deck of cards could potentially hold such deep, interconnected knowledge.
Yeah. What other lost keys might be hiding in plain sight? Things we dismiss because we're not looking at them with that kind of holistic, synthetic perspective.
Exactly. And how could these ancient ways of seeing things, this theogony, androgyny, cosmogony structure, how could that give us a different, maybe richer lens for our own times, our science, our society, even our personal understanding?
It definitely makes you reconsider what knowing something really means, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Lots to mull over there.